Lecture 5, Feudalism.
Welcome back to the High Middle Ages. In our previous lecture, we examined the history of chivalry in high medieval Europe. We saw how chivalry refers both to a set of qualities that medieval nobles were supposed to possess, as well as a mode of behavior that they're supposed to display to others. We identified the chivalric virtues of bravery and loyalty, and we saw that chivalric knights, according to the authors of chivalric romances, were supposed to display their virtues by defending the defenseless, by helping those who could not help themselves. We saw how the creators of chivalric literature were often court chaplains, clerics who were attached to aristocratic courts, and who were able to blend pre-existent noble values, such as a love of adventure, a love of prowess in those who fought, together with ecclesiastical, clerical concerns, such as a desire to defend others from nobility. We attempted to tackle the question of whether chivalry mattered in high medieval Europe, whether it had any impact on real-life knights. And in examining the history of tournaments, we attempted to make a case that indeed medieval nobles took chivalry rather seriously and to a certain extent, but only to a certain extent, modified their behavior accordingly. In this lecture, we will continue and conclude our consideration of the high medieval nobility by turning from chivalry to feudalism. We will examine how different historians have conceived of feudalism, defined it, and described it. We will see why so much controversy surrounds the use of the term feudalism, for there is no more vexed question in medieval history today than whether or not one can speak or should speak of feudalism. We will see how feudalism gave a certain amount of structure to medieval society by creating relationships among different members of that society, and we will see how feudalism, like so much else, changed during the High Middle Ages in response to broader demographic and economic forces. If you ever had the strange desire to see otherwise dignified, genteel medieval historians go berserk and physically assault one another, walk into any major medieval history conference, and within earshot of all, begin to speak either favorably or unfavorably about feudalism, without doubt, some of those close to you will wrap their hands around your throat and throttle you, but rest assured, others will leap to your defense. As to why the word feudalism and the use of this term can arouse such strong passions today, why historians debate so fiercely about it, well, the story of the concept of feudalism is somewhat long and complicated one. Once upon a time, historians spoke very easily about feudalism. They didn't really think twice about the fact that they were using this concept. It flowed from their pens, it dropped from their lips. And I would say that this was the case until the middle to the late 1960s. However, historians tended to describe feudalism in different ways. And as a result, one wound up not with a description of feudalism, but rather feudalisms. For different historians meant different things by the same term. One historian whose conception of feudalism remains highly influential today is a historian by the name of François-Louis Gansoff. Gansoff belonged to a pre-World War II generation, and Gansoff approached feudalism from a legal, from a military, from a rather narrow perspective. Gansoff's most famous book on the subject, which was translated into English with the title What is Feudalism? Pithy, in the 1950s, described feudalism as a set of relationships that existed within the medieval nobility, and only within the medieval nobility. And with admirable clarity, Gansoff discussed how powerful medieval nobles often granted fiefs to other nobles, less powerful nobles, known as vassals. One of the words used for fief in the Middle Ages was the Latin feudum, hence the term feudalism. When a lord granted a fief to a vassal, in Gansoff's conception of feudalism, the vassal then had to perform certain services in return for having received the fief from the lord, military services. The vassal who has received the fief uses the revenues generated by the land that he has received to equip himself as a knight, to buy the armor, to acquire the war horses that were going to be killed from under you, and then performed service for the lord. It was a crystal clear conception of feudalism. It was not the only conception of feudalism, because one of Gansoff's contemporaries, a French historian by the name of Marc Bloch, who is arguably the most influential and quite possibly the greatest medieval historian of the 20th century, had a rather different notion of what feudalism means and should mean to us. Bloch approached feudalism not so much from a legal and military point of view as from a sociological one. And he developed his ideas about feudalism in a book that was translated into English in the early 1960s under the title Feudal Society. And indeed, it was a very apt choice of title, because Bloch did not conceive of feudalism as being limited solely to the nobility, to relations between lords and vassals. Bloch conceived of feudalism as a type of society, a type of society very different from modern society. For Bloch, feudal society meant a society in which vertical ties of dependence were crucial structural elements. What does that mean in English? In English, it means that throughout medieval society, there were hierarchical relationships between lords and vassals on the one hand, lords and peasants on the other. We do not find ourselves entwined in these sorts of relationships. We do not have lords anymore. We do not have vassals anymore. And however different the relationship might be between a lord and a vassal, a lord and a peasant, nonetheless, Bloch perceived some similarities in that they were hierarchical. The lord is always in the superior position, in that the lord always provides protection for the underling. And the one who's in the dependent position, whether a peasant or a vassal, provides service in return for protection. A peasant will perform physical labor, service on a farm, whereas a vassal will perform military service. But nonetheless, it is service. Modern society does not know these sorts of relationships. It is highly atomized compared to medieval society. Bloch and Gansoff had two different conceptions of feudalism, and it must be said that they are not the only two definitions of feudalism that circulated before World War II or through, say, the 1960s. Many other historians, eminent historians, came up with somewhat different conceptions of feudalism. I'll limit myself to one other approach to feudalism, a Marxist approach to feudalism. Marxism's never been big in the American historical profession, certainly not on the scale of the European historical profession, but Marxist historians approached feudalism economically, not sociologically as Bloch had done, not militarily as Gansoff had done. They saw feudalism as a form of economic production. For Marxists, what defines feudalism and feudal society is the fact that the military elite of Europe is able to accumulate surplus profits from those under them by exploiting those under them, by using their military dominance to impose rights of lordship over others. Now, historians for a long time were content to use various concepts of feudalism and to throw the word around without always saying what exactly it was they meant by the term feudalism or which concept of feudalism they are using. But this was going to change. Beginning in the middle of the 1960s, the late 1960s, and continuing on to the present day, there has been a revolt against the concept of feudalism and against the use of the term feudalism. One of the historians who led the charge against the term feudalism was a woman by the name of Elizabeth Brown. And Elizabeth Brown published a very influential article in 1974. It was published in the American Historical Review, which is one of the most prestigious journals in the field of history. And it, too, had a rather pithy title, Feudalism, Tyranny of a Construct. Brown went through the work of other historians and showed how easily they used the word feudalism without defining what precisely they meant by it, and how there were, in fact, many different contradictory feudalisms circulating. She also suggested that feudalism was a construct. That is to say, it really had no basis in medieval reality. It was simply the invention of modern historians and had been read back into the historical record. And she also used the word tyranny in conjunction with it. Brown argued that historians had devoted an inordinate amount of time to discussing something that didn't really exist, and that we had all been laboring under the tyranny of feudalism. Other historians, impressed by Brown's critique of the term feudalism, have refined her arguments and come up with some very serious problems with the concept of feudalism. Some have even gone so far as to recommend that it be expunged from all history textbooks and all lectures on the subject of medieval history. They've pointed out that a word that is used so diversely could possibly have no meaning whatsoever. They pointed out that in journalism, in popular writing, the word feudalism is used even more loosely. It's often used simply as a synonym for the term medieval, or as an insult to be used about someone or a political system that you don't like. One historian gleefully pointed out how during the Iranian hostage crisis, the late 1970s, the word feudal was used so often in conjunction with Ayatollah Khomeini and the Iranian political regime that an unwary reader might have thought that his official title within Iran was feudal, because the word always followed his name in every news account that was written about the Iranian revolution. They have pointed out that while the word feudum did exist, the word feudalism did not exist. They have pointed out that reality often fell far short of the ideal, that lords sometimes granted fiefs to vassals but didn't demand service in return, that lords sometimes demanded service without granting fiefs to vassals, that lords sometimes demanded service other than military service. The exceptions went on, and according to critics, were so many that one simply should not use the word feudalism. They have also argued that Bloch's conception of feudalism creates a very misleading idea about medieval society, that to focus on vertical relationships of dependence, in which one is superior and one is inferior, is to ignore huge swaths of medieval society where horizontal collective bonds among equals were more important, such as within the towns of medieval Europe, which we'll get to in a future lecture. Now, I'll let you in on a very dirty secret about history. Whenever historians become enraged about a subject, it generally means that there is far more at stake in the debate than mere history. And this is certainly the case with the debate over feudalism. The revolt against feudalism, especially the timing of the revolt against feudalism, is not a coincidence. The 1960s, the early 1970s. It was a time in which all sorts of venerable institutions were being called into question. It's not surprising that medieval historians would take those concepts that had dominated their field and choose to challenge them as well. And indeed, in trying to figure out where any historian will come down on the question of whether there was feudalism and whether we should speak about it, there's a little key that I've worked out in order to figure out where a historian will stand. And generally, three factors will tend to determine whether someone is for feudalism or against feudalism. The first factor would be an individual's academic affiliation. If you are trained at a rather elite institution, you're going to be for feudalism because the status quo benefits you, and why rock the boat? Whereas those who have led the revolt and those who support the revolt against feudalism tend to not come from elite institutions and have an interest in shaking up the status quo. The revolt is generational. If a baby boomer were to be lecturing to you, probably would not use the word feudalism at all. Those who come before and after the baby boomer generation are more comfortable with the term feudalism. Gender is the third factor. Women historians led the attack on feudalism, and there is a reason for this. They've historically been disadvantaged by the status quo within the historical profession and have a strong interest in shaking it up, Male historians have benefited from the status quo and therefore cling to feudalism. It's not a perfect key. One will find exceptions, but nonetheless, very often you can deduce where a historian will stand. And it is always worth remembering that historians tend to see in the historical record what they've been conditioned to see. Now, if you use your key on me, you will notice that I am 3 for 3 in terms of using the word feudalism. And not surprisingly, lest I show my own key to be useless, I do think that the word feudalism has a place in medieval studies. I also acknowledge that the criticisms of the concept of feudalism are all very, very valid. The term feudalism has been used very loosely, and such loose usage is deplorable. The exceptions to the classic models of feudalism, the exceptions exist, and they are many, and they need to be taken into account. Nonetheless, there are lords, there are vassals, there are fiefs. There are lords who give fiefs to vassals in return for service. And I think there are enough instances of this to justify the use of the word feudalism. The prominence of horizontal ties within society need to be acknowledged, but they do not negate the existence of the vertical ties of dependence. And as for throwing words out of the language simply because they have multiple meanings, well, the English dictionary would be very slim indeed if we only included words that had one and only one meaning to use. But even if you want to use the word feudalism, whose definition should you choose and why? Well, even though my respect for Mark Bloch knows no bounds, I prefer the definition of Gansoff because I feel that his narrow definition most closely mirrors the terminology used in medieval documents themselves. Fiefs tend to be land possessed by nobles, not by peasants. And so, in the rest of the lecture, I'd like to explore in more detail Gansoff's conception of feudalism and how it worked. When two members of the nobility entered into a feudal relationship, they underwent a ceremony known as commendation, and they undertook certain responsibilities to one another. Each member of the feudal relationship, both the lord and the vassal, had obligations to one another. The lord has two obligations to the noble vassal. Obligation one, maintenance. Maintenance meaning the fief, the parcel of land that you are going to grant to the person who is to become your vassal. You do not give the land away. It is still your property, but the vassal may now use this land and collect the revenues generated by this land. In addition to maintenance, protection. If your vassal gets into a fight with another member of the nobility, comes into any danger whatsoever, you are obliged, as the lord of the vassal, to use your resources to protect this individual. In return, the vassal has two obligations to the lord: aid and counsel. Counsel meant advice. Whenever a lord had to face some major decision, to whom to marry your daughter, for example, or whether you should go to war with a neighboring castellan, you would summon your vassals, and your vassals were obliged to come to you, wherever you were, and to tell you, to the best of their ability, what they thought was in your best interests and what you should do. Aid meant military service. It meant military service performed with the equipment that you got by virtue of the fief. Vassals were often trying to weasel their way out of this. They would show up with their worst war horse, or they would claim that their armor was in the laundry that they had bought with the revenue from the fief. Lords were very careful to insist that whatever you can acquire, thanks to the fief, that's what you should be wearing when you show up to assist me in my wars with whomever I might be fighting. It should be noted that the feudal bond between lord and vassal is highly personal, and it is contractual, meaning that if either party fails to fulfill his obligations or her obligations, because, as we'll see, sometimes women can become involved in feudalism, then the bond is broken, and the relationship is off between the two individuals. It is personal in the sense that the relationship does not survive the death of one or the other parties. If the lord dies, the heir of the lord does not automatically become lord of the deceased lord's vassals. Every time one or the other party dies, the relationship must be renewed with whoever the successor of the deceased party might be. To become a vassal of a lord, you had to undergo a ceremony known as commendation. And the ceremony of commendation itself had two parts. You had to perform the act of homage, and you had to swear an oath of fealty. In the act of homage, the person who's to become the vassal of a lord appears bareheaded and weaponless as a sign of your submission to the will of this other individual, and you would kneel before the person who is to become your lord. You clasp your hands together like this in the ultimate gesture of submission. We use it for prayer today. And you hold your hands forward, stretch them out towards the Lord. The Lord, in turn, takes his hands and puts them around your hands, his hands on the outside and yours on the inside, and his squeezing very hard and hurting your hands shows that he is the superior in this relationship. You announce that you wish to become the man, the vassal of the Lord, and the Lord announces his willingness to accept you. Once you've done that, you have performed the act of homage. Then came the oath of fealty. You would take your very sore hands, you would place them on a Bible, you would place them on the nearest saint's relic, and you would swear that you would never injure the Lord in any way. Once you have sworn the oath of fealty, you have a feudal relationship. Now, feudal relationships existed already before the year 1000. They are not a creation of the High Middle Ages. They existed because they answered to the needs of both lords and vassals. For lords, feudalism was good because it allowed them to amass military retinues, to put together private armies using the land that they possessed. They do not lose the land. They're not supposed to lose the land that they grant out as fiefs. They're just losing the use of it. Technically, it's still their property. By putting together a private army, they have the chance to gain more land. They are better able to protect the land that they possess. Feudalism works for vassals, too. If you are having a hard time getting a knight's equipment, keeping a knight's equipment, finding the war horses and the armor, well, then the grant of a fief was a godsend because you would use the revenues from the fief and support yourself as a knight. Feudalism had something to offer all parties involved, lords and vassals, but it didn't work equally to the advantage of both groups. From the beginning, feudalism tended to work to the advantage of vassals and to the detriment of lords. And over time, even before the High Middle Ages and through the High Middle Ages, feudalism developed in such a way that vassals found themselves in a better and better position, while lords found themselves in a weaker and weaker position because there were some inherent problems involved in feudalism. Problem one was the fact that once you had granted a fief to a vassal, technically it's not the vassal's property. But nonetheless, it was rather difficult for a disgruntled lord to actually eject a vassal from a fief. If you were dissatisfied with the service, you had to go to the fief and you had to attack your vassal, go to war with your vassal. Whereas it was relatively easy for a vassal who was unhappy with one's lord to break the feudal tie and not give back the fief. Just hold on to it and wait for someone to come and throw you out. Possession was very helpful to vassals, and because feudalism is based on grants of land, the accountability of vassals, getting them to do what you want them to do, was always going to be a headache for lords, simply because you could not cut off their salary as one would do today with someone who is disobeying one's orders. But there were other changes in feudalism and how feudalism worked that worked even more to the disadvantage of lords. Before the year 1000, there were two major developments in feudalism, both of which were bad for lords and good for vassals. One major development concerned whether or not a fief could be inherited by the family of a vassal. Technically, this should not have been the case. It is not the property of the vassal. The vassal does not own the fief. You're just using it. And when you die as a vassal, the fief should go back to the lord who granted it to you in the first place. However, vassals wanted to keep fiefs in the family. They wanted to be able to hand them down from generation to generation. And by wheedling and needling and complaining to lords, it would gradually wear them down to the point where they would agree that if a vassal died, well, you can give the fief to your heir. Why was this a problem for lords and so good for vassals? It was a problem for lords because it often created very messy situations. If the heir of a vassal was a grown male, probably no problem. What if the heir was a woman? She can't perform the military service, the reason for which you granted a fief. Once fiefs become property that can be inherited, though, there is a good chance that a woman will get a hold of the fief, and you are now getting no military service for that property. What if the heir is a child, an infant, who is incapable, even if male, of performing military service? Once again, you are getting nothing for the fief that you granted. Despite the fact that it worked so much to their disadvantage, by 1000, the principle was generally accepted that when a vassal died, the fief should go to the heirs, regardless of whether the heir is a woman, regardless of whether an heir is a child. And once vassals had the right to bequeath fiefs to members of their family, well, it became harder to remember that it wasn't actually their property that they're bequeathing, that it's still the lord's property. Another problem with feudalism that had cropped up before the year 1000 concerned something that historians call multiplicity of homage, which means the following. When feudalism first develops in Europe during the 8th and the 9th centuries, each vassal was supposed to have one and only one lord, because it is an intensely personal relationship, and you're supposed to perform service for one's lord. However, some vassals figured out that the more individuals to whom you did homage, the more fiefs you got. And they would begin, rather promiscuously, doing homage to various lords and amassing fiefs. This was bad for lords because it created conflicts of interest. It was not unusual for one lord to go to war with another lord, and they would find that they are both lords of the same vassals. Now, whose side are you to fight? Sometimes the vassal would go fight on one side and send his vassals to go fight on the other side. Rather bizarre situation, it would seem. But it was an attempt to deal with the problem caused by multiplicity of homage. Now, lords did try and fix this by creating something known as liege homage in the 11th century. If you did liege homage, you swore that your loyalty to the liege lord came before your loyalty to any other lord. What will vassals begin to do? They will begin to do liege homage to every lord they can and start to acquire as many fiefs as they can. So this did not solve the problem either. During the High Middle Ages, the problems involved in feudalism simply grew worse and worse. By the time you get to 1300, feudalism was a considerably less important way of procuring military service. The military services owed by vassals became lighter and lighter as the High Middle Ages progressed. And in fact, vassals tended to buy out their military service more and more. They became lighter because vassals were constantly badgering their lords into making concessions about the military service that you owed. You would ask that you only have to perform service within a certain geographical area, for example. So if your lord goes to Syria, you don't have to go to Syria. You only have to serve close to home. You asked for time limits to be placed on your military service. Not 365 days a year, 40 days a year became a rather common limit placed on one's military service. Vassals began to demand that they get cash payments in addition to the fiefs for which they were performing their military service. And you see, you move towards a paid military rather than one in which land ownership is a principal means of getting access to warriors. As money became a more important part of medieval society as well, one starts to see vassals accumulating cash and simply buying out their military service. And feudalism, by the end of the High Middle Ages, had almost become more of an economic phenomenon than a military phenomenon. The payment that you would make to your lord to get you out of your military service was known as scutage, or shield money, and lords, knowing that the military service that vassals provided was sometimes very shoddy, not with the right equipment, and grumbling all the time, were sometimes grateful to get away with a cash payment for their military service. To sum up what we've seen today, historians have argued, and they continue to argue heatedly, over the term feudalism. They argue about it more than they argue about anything else in the field of medieval studies. They debate whether it should be used at all and what it might mean. And I think it's fair to say that there is no scholarly consensus on this issue at present. And even if there were, doesn't mean you should follow it, because the scholarly consensus can be wrong. We followed Gansoff's definition of feudalism as a set of relationships within the medieval nobility based on the ownership of land and the performance of military service. And we've seen how feudalism became less important during the course of the High Middle Ages. The next lecture, we will examine the history of medieval peasants, those whose work made it possible for nobles to live as they did.